Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 2, 2020. Medium published my new article America's Do or Die Day. An election year is always a tough year. But this year seems tougher than most. The trade war with China that seemed to be abating with the January 15th signing of Phase 1 of the trade agreement has been reignited as America blames China of spreading the coronavirus. And while the virus is wreaking havoc in the US with nearly 2 million people infected and more than 100,000 fatalities to date, Americans all over the country have suddenly taken to the streets in an intense outbreak of violence to protest the death of a black man at the hands of a white police officer during a botched arrest. America really needs a superhero now, but there is none in sight. As America's Do or Die Day approaches, the country depends on its people. If they vanquish hatred and unite above their differences, America will truly be great. If they do not, America will be gone. By now, the flares are about much more than Floyd's death, they are about the fate and future of America. The process is dynamic and advancing very quickly towards social collapse, and who knows what's next. As just said, the situation isn't bright. People are exhausted with worry. They don't know what tomorrow will bring, and the uncertainty causes anxiety. Even if people can comfort themselves with shopping where the economy has been reopened, they often can't afford to buy much because the lockdown has left them penniless, because they lost their jobs, or because the shops went bankrupt. In such a volatile situation, all it takes is a match, and that match was George Floyd's unwarranted death. By now, the flares are about much more than Floyd's death, they are about the fate and future of America. The process is dynamic and advancing very quickly towards social collapse, and who knows what's next. In many ways, the United States is modern-day Babylon, a collection of ethnicities, faiths, and races that arrived either forcefully or in pursuit of a dream. That dream is now gone, but the people are there to stay, and so is the hatred. Now they must forge a nation unlike any other. Out of the most diverse and divided collection of people to ever occupy a country, Americans must find something to unite around that will be greater than their division, enmity, and distrust. There is no other way. If they don't find a way to unite, the deepening chasms will rip the nation to pieces. To do this, America must stop trying to make everyone the same. People aren't the same, nor should they be. Just as no two organs in our body are the same, no two people are the same, and certainly no two races. However, just as all the organs in the body are complementary and essential for the existence of the body, so are the factions of American society. Diversity is not something to erase, it is something to embrace. It is a source of power, resilience, and joy. When different, even opposite organs in the body work together harmoniously, it is a sign of robust health. The factions of American society can and must do likewise. In the emerging global mayhem, the eyes of all the nations look to America for an example. Now that America is torn apart by hatred, its foul offshoots are already spilling over, as protests have erupted in London, Berlin, and Toronto. If Americans realize the responsibility that is resting on their shoulders, it just might help them find the strength to overcome centuries of fear, suspicion, and animus. Human history has always been written in blood, most often the blood of innocent people. We are living in historic times, when the entire human race is converging into one global entity. It is certainly a dramatic and historic shift, but we don't have to write this chapter in the usual way. We can do this consciously, willingly, out of our own volition, and therefore peacefully. The United States is the leader in this process. It is the most powerful nation, its population is the most diverse, and its social problems demonstrate the kind of challenges humanity will soon be facing. This puts the United States in a unique position to be the trailblazer and pave the way for a new humanity by setting an example of transcending bias, enmity, and fear. But will the American people choose to do so? Only they will decide. My article in Newsmax, Segregation of the Hearts. Between what seems to be a hopeless battle against the coronavirus, a trade war with China, a rancorous election year and riots all over the United States, it seems as though America has really got it bad this time. The choices now are clear and simple: keep trying to put out each fire separately or accept and finally embrace the differences and rejoice in the benefits that they give to the nation. Currently, the chasm between blacks and whites in America is insurmountable. It has not been bridged since the liberation of black people from slavery, and it will not be bridged at any time in the future if America continues to tread the same path. Even without official segregation, the segregation in the hearts reigns high on both sides, and this is the heart of the problem. All people and nations are different. They are not better or worse because of their color, character, tongue or culture. In fact, whatever the ethnicity, deep down, we are all selfish to the core. This is human nature, or as the Bible puts it, the inclination of a man's heart is evil from his youth. The question isn't who is right and who is wrong, since when people act out of hatred, they are always wrong. They always feel that they are right, but they are always wrong because they want not only to undo injustice, but to take revenge and humiliate the other side. If you don't believe me, take a look at the riots in your city and decide for yourself whether they are protesting the death of George Floyd, or venting their hatred and violence. The situation is even tougher because an election year always highlights the differences as parties try to draw votes by fanning the hatred between ethnicities and faiths. But it seems like America has no choice. It is on the brink of collapse. The situation is extremely volatile, and caution and care are mandatory at this point. Americans must recognize that the factions of society are all interdependent and can't live without each other. America consists of whites, blacks, Hispanics and countless other ethnicities and faiths. In such a state, tensions are bound to happen, and the only option is for all to learn to live together. And by learning to live together, I am not referring to the separation and hostility that exist today. Together means that each element in American society brings its unique qualities to the common pot and fuses into the American whole, which is bigger, more beautiful and far more powerful than any of its individual parts could be on its own. The power of American society is in its diversity. It just hasn't realized it. Each facet has its unique beauty, qualities and characteristics. When you employ these unique traits for the common good, America can literally achieve whatever it wants, if it only decides to work as a united nation rather than as a fractured landmass. Perhaps the best example of collaboration of different elements is Mother Nature herself. When you look at any being in nature, you'll find that it consists of countless unique organs. Even dual organs such as lungs are not identical. At the same time, the organs are all equally contributing to the body everything they can to sustain its well-being. Despite the differences between the organs and sometimes even complete oppositeness, there is no hatred among them. On the contrary, there is support and appreciation among them, or they wouldn't be able to collaborate in maintaining a healthy and vibrant body. As it is in all of nature, so it is in America or in any country, for that matter. Whatever factions are in it, they are there as organs and exist so as to work together for the benefit of the entire country. Any other perspective will and does yield endless fighting and eventual disintegration. Now we can see more clearly than ever that America's choice is to rise above the hatred and collaborate for the sake of the bleeding nation, or let it bleed until there is no nation. The coronavirus and the creator. Question. A letter from a doctor in Italy was posted on the internet, who writes, "Never, even in the darkest nightmares, did I imagine that I could see and experience what was happening in our hospital for 3 weeks. The nightmare was growing. At first there were several patients, then dozens, and then hundreds. And now we are no longer doctors, but sorters on the conveyor belt. and we decide who is to live and who is to be sent home to die. No later than 2 weeks ago, my colleagues and I were atheists. This was normal because we are doctors and we know that science excludes the existence of God. Now we have to admit, we, as humans, have reached our limits, we cannot do more. And we are exhausted. Two of our colleagues died, and others became infected. Answer: he was shown the road, that there is the upper force, the upper plan, the upper predestination, and this comes from the Creator. That is, another higher power, besides yourself, since you considered yourself a master. There is another master who shows and manifests himself now in front of everyone in the world. And every person in the world somehow feels that he is walking under God. And this is good. Everyone, however, has his own ideas. Basically, these are such crass, primitive ideas that it is better not to talk about them, better not to say who they consider God is, etc. But still, it is a step forward. A person is no longer like a small child who repeats, "It fell by itself, it broke by itself." But he already says, "No, there is an upper predestination here. There is some will, some power here. It did not happen by itself, it is not even me, I am governed." That is, there is a step forward here. Question: it is clear that this is the cry of a man who is at a dead end and does not know what to do. But how does one establish this connection with the Creator, with nature? How? Answer: a person must want it. Seriously want it. And only in this way will he come to the Creator. Question: how can he want without suffering, without being forced to? Answer: it is impossible without suffering. Everything that we ultimately receive, absorb, and understand, no matter what we do, is reached by pain. Comment: but there is no upper humaneness in this, there is no kindness in this. My response: this is according to your understanding. And I claim that it could not be otherwise, because otherwise you will not have the correct aspiration, there would be no desire, and there would be no basis for understanding. After all, everything you attain as something opposite from yourself, you attain the Creator. Besides man, there is only the Creator. How can I discern him, not just what he set around me here, but himself? In order to do this, I really need to make an effort. And you say, "No, let it come by itself." It will not come by itself. You will not have a desire for it. You must have an intention, a desire, an aspiration, a pain. And when you feel that you are in exile from the Creator and suddenly begin to reveal him, you will see that the Creator says, "Well, come here. I have been waiting for you for so long." And how do we act with children? Is it not the same? We want to arouse in them some desire, some aspiration, something. When it comes up, we immediately start moving to meet them. Question: why is it not possible to illuminate a little, to slightly open? Answer: this is what the Creator is doing to people now. This is what the doctor who wrote this letter is telling us. Comment: no, he is doing it out of pain. My response: of course. And how else would you reveal it to a person? Comment: it is as if suddenly it is revealed to a person that there is light and happiness ahead. My response: and he does not feel anything at the same time because he has no desire for this, no pain, no suffering. All movie scenarios are also built on suffering. The screenwriter arouses suffering, aspirations, some kind of understanding in people. Lack, in short. And then, due to this deficiency, he fills them, and they really feel pleasure to the extent of the deficiency they felt. Comment: then give a person some advice on how to live now, at this moment of suffering taking place around him, or fear when he is at home. I keep asking about it all the time because basically this is what now preoccupies a person. My response: stop sitting and crying. You must work hard to find out the Creator's attitude toward you and the attitude that you should have toward him. That is all. Question: can you please tell us what the Creator is? What is he for me? Answer: the Creator. It is very simple. The Creator is a force that contains absolutely everything that exists. Question: this means that I have to feel that I am inside this force? Answer: of course. If you want to put it geographically or geometrically, then inside this force. Question: and I should come into accord with it? Answer: if you want to understand it and hope that you can affect it, then you must know it, study it. You must become aware and understand how it works with you. And you, as a small child, do not understand what it wants from you. You must learn what it wants from you. And then you will act in unison with your upper government. Question: and what does it want from me? Answer: it wants you to grow wiser, mature, begin to understand the Creator, interact correctly with Him. Question: if I get to the point of starting to build good relations with other people around, is this a step? Answer: sure. This is a step forward. The Creator is hidden so that you clearly understand how to tune into Him. A huge number of opportunities have been created around you. Until you find the right contact with created beings on Earth, that is, treat inanimate, plant, animal, and human matter correctly, you will not be able to relate to the Creator correctly. Question: and only suffering can push me to this? Only suffering and nothing else? Answer: suffering may be different. It may be small, big, sharp or dull. It all depends on you, to the extent that you yourself will tune yourself to establish a dialogue with the Creator. Question: what does compassion for a person mean for you? Answer: it means to bring him to connection with the Creator. This is my purpose. I only regret that I cannot do this in full force. It is both that I am probably not capable of it, and people are not ready for it. And the Creator cannot reveal himself more. This is the minimum level to which we must rise, today's interaction with the Creator. Comment: in some comments you are accused of welcoming the virus. The whole world is fighting the virus now, and suddenly you say, no, let's say thank you to it. My response: if people want to get rid of the virus that causes them suffering, they must understand that they need to unite. That is all. Nothing else. Unite. And then the virus will just evaporate, fly away. Moreover, it will help our unity. Question: the problem is that it is almost impossible for us, egoists, to unite. It is already a rhetorical question. How can we connect as we are? Answer: we must ask the Creator for this. Of course, we have no strength. He purposely did not give us this strength. He says, I have created evil. Do you want to turn it into good? Please, ask me. Question: the last cry of the doctor who writes, I realize my worthlessness on this earth, and I want to take my last breath helping others, is this still some kind of a revelation for a man? Answer: of course. By this he is already redeeming a lot in himself. Question: that is, if a person suddenly reveals a desire for his life to belong to others, is this a step toward the Creator? Answer: yes. It is precisely because he sees this suffering and wants to help people that such inclinations, such movements toward them, develop in him. This is a big correction. It is for this purpose that we have been given suffering, so that we can correctly direct ourselves towards each other above them. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, March 23, 2020. Coming out of quarantine, part 2. Now as we start coming out of quarantine back to normal life, shops, services, and businesses start to open. And there is a feeling that a dark cloud called the coronavirus descended upon us and then vanished, as if nothing happened. But in reality, this is a deceptive impression because the old life will never return. We will now find out and realize that there is no way back, as no man never steps in the same river twice. This is why we will not be able to return to a life built on competition and endlessly increasing consumption. On the contrary, we operate within the system of nature even if we are not aware of this fact and do not feel it. Today's systems of nature differ from those that existed before the coronavirus. They will not allow us to use our evil egoism to our detriment in the same form as we did before. The virus has revealed that we are all connected and depend on each other. The pandemic has spread through the entire world and hit everybody. Our biological bodies are connected into one system that operates above these bodies and connects them with each other. That is why the illness that appeared in one place suddenly flare up in another and then in another. The virus strikes villages that have never had any contact with civilization. Where did it get there from? The system of nature operates here, and after reaching a certain state, it releases this problem called the coronavirus into the world. Therefore, we will not be able to return to the previous state even if we want to. It is impossible to go back. Such a thing has never happened in history. In relations between people, it is impossible to go back, only forward, either to a new life or to a new death. The common trouble has changed society for the better. It obliges us to solidarity and mutual guarantee. We see how young people help the elderly who are at risk. Now, with a return to normal life, all these positive changes and mutual care between people are at risk of disappearing if we do not listen to what nature wants to tell us, if we do not understand that we are all connected and determine each other's future. The entire globe and the entire universe in general are one integral system, and the state of each of its degrees, inanimate, vegetative, animate, and human, depends on all the others. Behind us is a long history of growth of our egoism, which brought us to the recognition of evil. In fact, we have already recognized this evil because no one is happy with their lives, neither the rich nor the poor, neither the smart nor the stupid, neither the strong nor the weak, neither the young nor the old. As it is written, "Against your will you are born, against your will you live, and against your will you die." Therefore, we need to make a total revision of our lives. The coronavirus helped us immensely by showing us that we are on this earth as one human population and that we must take into account our dependence on each other. We must build a society that is not based on competition, where we expend all our strength causing only harm to ourselves. I cannot associate with my good future by making someone else's worse. It is time to move to a new state. We must, as humans, confront our evil nature and build a different, better degree above it. Therefore, it is obvious that there can be no going back to the old days. Why should we go back? Did we live joyfully and happily? Were we at peace about the future of our children, giving birth to them for a life in such a world of mutual competition with danger lurking at every turn, in a world of lies and hatred? Let's imagine now. Envision what reality we would like to come to rather than return to. What should a good life be like? Are we able to change ourselves? One thing is clear, it is impossible to return to the old days. We have neither strength, money, or any reason to do so. In trying to do this, we will only waste our strength and nerves by getting involved in conflicts that would lead to World War III. We have no other choice. If we are inside an integral nature, we must also organize ourselves as an integral society. The inanimate, vegetative, and animate degrees exist in one closed symbiosis. Humans break through these boundaries of nature. They go from the animate to the human degree and run rampant there in their egoism, destroy everything, and go from war to war, conflict to conflict. Now we are at a very important, crucial point where we must stop developing egoistically and start learning and taking the implementation of the laws of nature upon ourselves. Human society must be a round, integral part of the integral nature, and take a step toward connection. We allegedly used nature for our own benefit, but it was only for the benefit of our egoism. Look what we have done to this world, how dirty and ruined it is. We cannot go on like this. We do not have any other planet to live on except this one. And now, having stopped production for 2 months, we see how nature instantly begins to revive. The air is cleaner, the atmosphere is restored, the ozone is restored, you can hear the joyous singing of birds, and forest animals walk the city streets. They will try to bring us back to the past, to make us slaves of the system we created, but it will not work. Nature has its own engine of development, which will push us forward and will not allow us to roll back. If we try to return to the old order, we will pay a very high price, we will experience a lot of suffering and misery, up to a third world war. There is no going back, no stepping twice into the same river. We must move forward to the image of an integral human being for each one individually and for all of us together as one creation. From Cab TV's The New Life, May 5th, 2020. Michael Lehtman, on Quora, is the love of truth the ultimate spirituality? What is spirituality? Spirituality is an opposite altruistic quality to our egoistic human nature. The human ego, the desire to enjoy, is behind every thought and desire we have, and behind every action that we do. Therefore, we perceive what we want to see according to the ego, that is, whether we can enjoy something, or whether something comes to threaten our enjoyment. This is why if we want to discover spirituality, that is, to find out what surrounds us that is imperceptible to our egoistic perception, we thus need to recreate ourselves, and in the process of recreating ourselves, our environment holds primary importance. In other words, since altruism is imperceptible and opposite to egoism, we thus need help from our surroundings to inspire, prod and motivate us to want to reach an opposite quality to our egoism. When we make the shift from egoism to altruism, corporeality to spirituality, we will sense a new world that has always surrounded us, but which we could not perceive. In the wisdom of Kabbalah, that new world is called the spiritual world or the upper world. Our current worldviews are perceptions that are formulated upon our egos in order to comfort and shield ourselves in various ways. Truth then becomes what coincides with our ego-based opinions. We seek support for our opinions and repel what counters them. As such, we ultimately do not want to change ourselves. How, then, do we reach a desire to change ourselves and discover spirituality? If we fail to do so of our own accord, through positive means, that is, by surrounding ourselves with an environment that supports the shift from egoism to altruism, then suffering will enter our lives more and more in order to show us that the purely egoistic direction we head in is problematic and that something needs to change. However, suffering itself won't lead us to change, but to a desire to change, where we will seek out different environments and influences than our current ones, in order to develop ourselves spiritually. Michael Lehtman, on Quora, how do I tell fake news from real news? The real news is that the media publicizes and broadcasts the news in accordance with its owners' funding sources' agendas, that is, it is all ultimately fake news. When subscribers were the primary source of news media funding, then the media was indebted to them. That is, to the people buying, reading and watching the news on offer. However, when media proprietors became the primary source of news media funding, with the media relying on advertisers for its sustenance, then the media serves owner and advertiser interests, blurring any authenticity that once existed in news coverage. Today, there is widespread awareness of fake news reporting. More and more people are questioning the genuineness and the interests behind the media they consume, yet out of a lack of options, continue consuming the news from the same sources. Yet, instead of finger-pointing at media corruption for fake news, we would be wiser if we took a moment to examine ourselves, each and every one of us that makes up society. The media is no more corrupt than its enveloping society, which we all make up. It is, rather, a product of society's values, influences and behaviors. Fake news awareness is thus insufficient to reach a stage where we will have real news. Reaching real news depends on undergoing serious introspection and realizing first that the media is no better or worse than the society it resides within, a society driven by individuals each prioritizing personal well-being over the well-being of society. Fake news and corrupt media then become viewed as reflections of who we really are, self-centered beings who each try to benefit ourselves in life as best as we can. And such self-analysis should lead us to a pressing question: is this the society we really want to live in? If it is, then fake news and media corruption should not concern us. However, if we aspire to a society that blossoms with happiness, kindness, support, encouragement and a generally positive atmosphere, then we would need to reset our social values, to prioritize benefiting others in society over benefiting ourselves. Such a change is easier said than done, but it is indeed doable. It requires regularly learning about our interdependence, how we are all interconnected and dependent on each other. We would do well to understand our interdependence from many different angles, until it starts becoming a tangible sensation, where we feel that any move we make has an impact on others' lives. The coronavirus exemplified our interdependence in terms of our health. How one person's health depends on the other person following health department orders, such as the maintenance of personal hygiene, keeping a certain distance from others and wearing masks in public. According to our interdependence, one person's indifference, lack of concern, divisive attitudes and antipathy spreads negatively to others, sparking a harmful chain reaction that negatively affects society. However, if we each feel our interdependence, as if we are all parts of a greater whole, then our care for our common possession would let us refrain from harming it, and instead, we would each seek how to make it prosper and grow as much as possible. Understanding that fake news and media corruption stem from the way we each prioritize self-benefit over benefiting others in society, we can then see that nothing effective comes from blaming the news and those directly behind it for being fake. On the contrary, if we want to change the media, we need to change ourselves and make ourselves first want to benefit society over our personal benefit. If we continue letting ourselves be held back from improving our relations, then we can expect more fake news and media corruption emerging together with myriad other problems filling our society. Moreover, we would see no solution in sight. Real news would thus come as a result of self-examination and improvement of human relations. Negative exploitative attitudes are like viruses that we infect each other with on a daily basis. Positive change thus requires a common effort to build a positively connected society by developing mutually considerate and responsible relations. If we make that slight calibration in our thinking, then we will experience a completely new and upgraded world. Michael Leitman, on Quora: Do Heaven and Hell Really Exist? Heaven, which in Hebrew is called Gan Eden, lit. The Garden of Eden, is the light of Hochma. The garden is Malkhut, which is the last Sephirah in the process of creation, made to receive the entire bounty of fulfillment that was created. Malkhut filled with the light of Hochma is called Heaven, the Garden of Eden. In such a state, Malkhut is the Malkhut of the world of Atzilut for the souls. In other words, Heaven refers to a state where the souls are filled abundantly with the light of Hochma. The upper part of Heaven is Bina of the world of Beria, and the lower part of Heaven is Yesod de Malkhut of the world of Asir. I purposely wrote the spiritual placements of Heaven to counter people's regular ideas about Heaven and its contents, because in spirituality, there are no corporeal forms, space, time, images or sounds. What exists in spirituality? Only forces that have not been dressed in matter. The spiritual soul is a desire. The soul becomes filled with the elated sensation of bestowal and love when it equalizes itself to the force of love and bestowal, the Creator. That sensation is called Heaven. There is no other kind of heaven. What, then, is hell? Hell is a state we experience on our way to heaven. It is a state where we burn with shame when we discover that our egoistic nature is completely opposite to the Creator's altruistic nature. It is a necessary state to feel, because through the sensation of shame, we can reach a decision to restrict our ego, and enter into equivalence of form with the Creator's quality of love and bestowal. In the Wisdom of Kabbalah, we study about the first restriction, Tzimtzum Aleph, occurring due to the Kli, vessel/desire, discovering its opposite nature of receiving to the Creator's giving nature, and the shame it felt made it perform a restriction upon itself in order to come closer to the Creator. Answers to your questions, Part 249. Question. The heart is our ego, and the point in the heart is the awakening toward the Creator, toward the attribute of bestowal, which is inherent in us from the beginning. How do the heart and the point in the heart begin to develop in the corporeal world from a drop of semen? I am interested in a practical, technical answer to this question so that based on it, I will be able to understand how to speed up the development of the attribute of bestowal. For example, if the point in the heart in the corporeal world develops as a sense of oneness with the world in the prenatal period and infancy until the age of 2, then it is actually this experience, the desire to experience it, which becomes the meaning of life. And if this is so, we need to acquire an emotional and not an abstract mental sense in order to speed up the development of the attribute of bestowal. Answer. The only way to speed up the development of the attribute of bestowal is by practicing it in the group. Don't give up your mission. Question. If the Creator gave all of us a virus, then what is the point of asking Him to take it away or cure this virus? Is this not in direct disagreement with the perfection of the Creator's governance in our world? Answer. No. The Creator specifically created evil. It is said, I created the world to receive and gave the upper light for its correction so that we would learn to be like Him through the revelation of evil and the system of its correction. We should never abandon this mission, otherwise we will remain as insects in this world and nothing more. From Kab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, March 15, 2020. Why we love rest. Baal HaSulam, the study of the 10 Sefirot, it is known that each branch is like a root, therefore everything that is in the root finds justification in the branch, loved and desired by it. And that which is not in the root, from that the branch moves away, does not tolerate and hates it. Everything that is contained in the Creator, and stretches to us directly from Him, is pleasant to us. That is, we love peace, because there is no movement in our root. We love peace of mind because our root, the Creator, is at rest. Without realizing it, we feel the absence of inner peace because we do not coincide with Him in terms of properties, and this causes movement in us. If we knew which way to go, we would quickly find a state of rest. From Kab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, June 10, 2019. Toward an altruistic connection. Question. When I studied at MEC Online, Benny Baruch's Russian Education Center, I decided for myself that I should stay away from all the material problems of a friend, because this could hurt my spiritual progress. But at the Congress some kind of connection was awakened between us, a greater involvement in each other. For example, I got a headache, and a friend was already poking around in his pocket and giving me a bill. But at the next meeting, I was ashamed to look in his direction, awkward, I felt obliged to him. What is the role of such expressions of caring and concern between friends in spiritual advancement? Answer, you must reach a state where you will not be uncomfortable with one another. On the contrary, it will bring you together completely unselfishly, without any calculations. I gave a friend the opportunity to help me, and I am very happy about this. I am glad that I have such friends who immediately felt that I needed their help. There is no giver and receiver here. Everyone gives and everyone receives. That is how one should strive to consider such states. In the general network of relations between us, there are no states at all when I give to you, but you don't give to me, or I receive, but you don't, because both bestowal and reception are absolutely equivalent, one and the same. When I give, by that I receive. A friend gives me the opportunity to give to him. Maybe you give him a pill or something else, but in fact you receive from him. This is partly what you felt in your relationship at the Congress. There is no such thing, I receive or I give. These are all actions for the mutual connection between us. In an integral connection, the actions themselves have no meaning. What matters is only the construction of this absolute network, when all the strings of communication, and there are an infinite number of them, get aligned and are transformed. And on this level the quality of the Creator reigns. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, March 1, 2020. The Spiritual Role of Women, Part 9. How does fate lead two people to marriage? Question: Who is a woman for a man and vice versa, a man for a woman in the spiritual? How do they identify each other? Are there any patterns in family and spiritual life? Answer: Do not think about it. There are certain spiritual conditions between husband and wife, but nothing more. There is no need to consider everyone else. Question: But still there are some active interactions provided for between the spouses? Answer: Yes, of course. We do not just meet and get married. Although sometimes we make a lot of all kinds of mistakes, however, if we conceive children, then this is already a family. And then, in accordance with this, the score is already relative to the relationship between a man and a woman. Question: If there are no accidents, how is the combination of souls for the needs of their correction connected with how fate brings two people to marriage? Answer: It seems to you that fate, who is allegedly blindfolded, leads you and pulls one out of the crowd, the other out of the crowd, and brings them together. Nothing like this. These are all spiritual forces that act in accordance with the initial state of breaking up the soul and with the final state of uniting all the broken parts together. Between these two states, all the souls go through their rearrangements, combining, and giving birth to children and so on. All this happens gradually, until we come to the general correction. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, March 8, 2020. Playing on all levels of nature. Question: Is this game a socially based principle both in our world and in a person's spiritual work? Do I have to understand what the goal is I'm heading toward, take certain principles, and use them in this game? Answer: Yes, otherwise it is impossible without the playing. Even plants have the principle of the game, only we do not notice it. In the animal world we see clearly how small animals play with each other, otherwise they don't develop. Their parents understand this, give them the opportunity to play, and treat this play with great patience. As for us, we naturally know that a person can be developed through playing. There is no other way. Therefore, we use all the elements of the game. See how many different toys we invent just so our children can develop. The same goes for Kabbalah. Kabbalah opens up a whole new world for us in which a person must develop spiritually from scratch, no matter who the person is in our world. This may be a 30 or 40 year old person, in one's prime, a scientist, wise, but absolutely undeveloped in spirituality. Therefore, we invent all kinds of actions that can develop this person. First and foremost, these are the actions that take place in a group. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, March 25, 2019.